Hey everybody, happy Sunday. Welcome to Blessed Child. There's been a few feedback from last episode. One of them I just want to clarify. When I touched on QAnon reporting on the Moonies, what I meant to say was QAnon Anonymous podcast reporting on the Moonies, which happens to be a very not pro QAnon group. It's actually quite the opposite. They do extensive research to debunk conspiracy theories and have actually gone undercover to the Rod of Iron Ministries. If you go to QAnon Anonymous and play their podcast episode 163, you will see that they infiltrated the Rod of Iron Freedom Festival and spent 3 days there in Pennsylvania. Travis View covered it, and it is quite intense. For ex-Moonies, I will give you a trigger warning. It's very triggering when they play the songs, the holy songs that these people are singing for Moonies in the group. It's very enlightening as a third-party objective view. So it's something definitely looked into. And then if you go back to episode 160, they actually interviewed one of my favorite podcast hosts, Elgin Strait, and it starts about at the 20-minute mark. Elgin's interview starts about 58 minutes. The hosts lay out a timeline of the cult's concerning activities from the UC's involvement with Watergate and funding of the Contras in Nicaragua with Reagan to Moon's Washington Times newspaper and a bunch of other history. So I wanted to clarify that this is not a pro QAnon podcast, and we do not support conspiracy theories. We do support evidence-based historical facts as well as personal stories within the Unification Church. So I wanted to clarify that. And while we're on the subject of podcasts, since most of my listeners are probably ex-cult members or cult members looking for critical thinking and freedom of thought, there are a few podcasts that I want to shout out while we're here. I appreciate all my followers from around the globe. I know I don't put out that much content, so I'm going to tell you guys what I listen to. So one of my top favorites, of course, is Falling Out Pod with Elgin Strait. It's a podcast of ex-Moonies' personal stories, and it's very enlightening on the Unification Church culture, the heart of the culture, the hidden that's hidden in the shadows. The other amazing podcast that I listen to is Jen Kiaba's Lessons on Leaving, which is heavily research-based for leaving the Unification Church and understanding the tactics of thought reform used. So I definitely recommend those two podcasts. The other podcast that I enjoy listening to would be The Cult Vault. They're touching on Unification Church stories. And then I also listen to Lunastream, which is a podcast done by second generation current church members. And they really do reflect a lot of the concerns in the Unification Church today. And I know it sounds maybe sadistic to listen to Lunastream, but actually, I find it very cathartic because it takes me back to that time when I was having very controlled thoughts, but on the edge of critical thinking. And for me, listening to these people in current time nowadays, it gives me a lot of empathy for the person I used to be. And I know it might even be desensitizing because of the language and the rhetoric they use, but also it gives me a sense of compassion for my younger self because I have compassion for these people that are in the movement right now and they have real concerns. So those are the Unification Church related podcasts I listen to. There's also a really wonderful episode on What the Faith. There are great episodes on What the Faith. So those are the podcasts. Since you guys are podcast listeners and you have touched and reached me, I am extending some of my favorite podcasts to you. And with that, let's start the rest of Kyle Sullivan's story on how he infiltrated Camp Sunrise.
So my journey to Camp Sunrise,
Oh, shit.
yeah, probably that's probably the closest, that's as far deep as I got into the church. This must have been summer from junior to senior year, and I went up with two of her friends, and one of their friends was a counselor there, and they wanted to see her, and I was the only one with a car, and I was like, sure, I'll go to some summer camp that you know, we can drink at. And like, so, yeah, I went up with both of the, both, you know, two Moonies to see another Moonie and drove up. And there were, have you been to Camp Sunrise?
I spent many summers.
Okay. All right.
Working so at Camp Sunrise. Yeah.
At that point, there were like some cabins that were kind of abandoned or weren't being used. So, so, you know, in true 16-year-old, 17-year-old fashion, you know, you have the Poland Spring bottles filled with vodka as your go-to, you know, and, so we had some of that and yeah, we just hung out there, you know, during a campfire. And I think I ended up just sleeping in one of the abandoned cabins in a sleeping bag. Oh, and God. Like, you know, we hung out and passed the water bottle around and, you know, it was a lot of fun. And at least that day, no one realized I was like an outsider, until the next morning. You know, we were all a little hungover and hungry. So we went to like the lunch.
The mess hall.
Yeah, which was pretty funny. It was like rice and then French fries. and then, yeah, you know, for the most of the two halves. But
that's like the perfect like metaphor for us, like rice and French fries. Like,
right. That's what I'm just trying to say is the most insensitive way, but it was a little funny to see that. But yeah, so I was eating, and then I remember seeing this older counselor, like just like eyeing me from like across the mess hall, and like get up and like slowly walk towards our table, and like whispering to other people. And then finally got up to our table, and he was like, "Who are you? Why are you here? How did you get here? What's happening right now?" And I was like, "Oh, I mean, I just dropping someone off." And he's like, "You need to leave now." And then,
you got some balls going into the lunch.
Yeah.
Like, what, dude?
But I have to. So then, like the leader of Camp Sunrise, it was like this woman, like came over and she kind of like shoved the guy aside and was just like, "I'm sorry, like you can finish eating, like don't worry about it." Like she was really nice about it, but then you know she was like, "But yeah. Get the fuck out." Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That was a like, probably right,
message received. And yeah.
Dude, Kyle, you're about to be assassinated. You didn't even know.
No, like, no, no. Or you might be like married off to one of the randos. But, dude.
I would have stayed if that was the fucking negotiation.
Do it. Like, oh my God.
But the one memory that I do really remember from Camp Sunrise was it was either the day before when no one realized I was there. And I remember like, you know, these young kids drawing chalk on, you know, like the, you know, one of the paths, and they were drawing like true mother, true father. And I just remember being like, who's true mother and who's true father? And then like, you know, like a five-year-old was like, "Well, true mother, blah 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 blah." And that was when I was like, "Oh, okay, all right, this is not just a camp."
This holy might shit. Be
a little bit different. Still, when I was like not fully, I didn't have the full understanding of the Moonies yet, so yeah.
Wow. But
yeah. One outsider funny. Did infiltrate for about 24 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn, Kyle, you do have some components. That's crazy. That kind of explains that picture that you drew that I'm going to make the cover for this episode. Can you explain that?
One in college. Yeah.
Okay, that was so after. So that was after this experience.
That was way after. I don't even remember the homework assignment, but it was like a homework assignment where you felt like an outsider or something. And I was like, there was that cult that was in our town. Maybe that'll give me a good grade.
Holy shit! Yeah, that really must have influenced you. That drawing is telling.
Still in my head, and you know, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, what, yeah.
You made it for Micah?
Yeah, it was like a homework assignment freshman year.
Okay. Micah is an art school for anybody who doesn't know.
Yeah. Maryland Institute College of Art. Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. And to explain that paint, it's going to be the cover for this episode, but it's Kyle Sullivan smoking a cigarette in rows of Matching and Blessing. Like he's at the Blessing front row with some mysterious bride. I love that.
That's fantastic, Kyle. I don't think I've seen that. So, but I'm sure I will soon. So,
I think I got like a nice B+ on it. Yeah.
A B+? Seriously?
I have no memory of what I actually got on that assignment, but yeah.
We got an A+ from Renee. There you go.
Yeah, dude, that's so crazy that we made you feel like outsiders. We felt like outsiders.
I think we talked about this like when we were arranging this meeting that like for us we were always kind of tourists when it came to the Unification Church. We always had a safe distance, you know, of kind of just looking in and observing.
Some of that distance was just ignorance too, which over time comes to light.
Yeah, but it was, I mean, compared to other people in Irvington, our friend group definitely, I feel like, got the closest to learning and also actually being in those physical spaces where we weren't supposed to be.
Yeah. East Garden, Belvedere, Camp Sunrise.
Yeah. These sites that our souls were definitely not allowed to be in contact with.
So casually. Oh, I love this. I hope somebody in the church listens and is like, oh my God.
Someone from Camp Sunrise is going to be like, I remember that kid. I was like, who the hell is that too?
I have a serious question for you guys.
Mm.
Did it ever cross your mind to join the movement?
Yeah.
Not for me, I don't think, but I'll let Kyle go first.
No, I mean, like, not like serious in that, like, I mean, there would be no way I think I could ever like believe in any of the, in the belief system that came along with it. But like
Reverend Moon.
Right. Yeah. I'm sorry, but there's no way in hell that my mind could ever make me believe he's the second coming and blah, 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 and the spirit world. And, but like I said before, there was an attraction to like this, community, family kind of thing. And I have a great family. It wasn't that I didn't have a great family. It was more just being a part of something bigger than yourself.
Wow. And
I think that's a trait and a problem that a lot of people, nowadays have, of just kind of wanting that kind of belonging to a larger group, that, was kind of, back in the day, church and small communities, filled that hole. And I think, in 2021, those communities don't exist anymore. There's, people are a little bit more alienated, and seeing the Unification Church and, just how, at least from an outsider's perspective, not really understanding the inner workings and that, like, not all of you were friends and there was a lot of people spying on each other and you couldn't actually be yourself and all of that, you know. But initially there was that feeling of like, oh, that would be nice to join something, and all of a sudden you're part of, you know,
something huge. A support system, you'd think.
Yeah,
I think that's human nature. System.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think it's human nature. We're social creatures and we want the biggest, safest group to be part of.
And
that makes total sense.
Yeah, there's a whole nother level of comfort there, just, you know, in mass, people in mass like that.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. There's a safety in it.
Right, exactly. You almost have a safety net, exactly. For myself, I even before I had an understanding of the Unificationist Church, I always approached religion with like from a place of like anger in my youth. Just like, I just like everything about religion just seems like the answer to something we didn't know, but now we do know, you know. Like, we thought heaven was in the clouds and then we went to space, and we thought hell was in the earth, and then we, you know, found out what was actually the earth was made of and shit like that. So at the end of the day, I was always very harumph about any form of religion. But I think once I started peeling back the layers of what a unification and being a part of the church meant, as far as, you know, you have these very unique experiences, I definitely sympathized with what they were going through, because I had my own sort of connections to it with my like being against religion, and how that struggle for them was even harder. So while I didn't want to become part of the church because I didn't want to associate myself with any part of religion, I definitely, you know, sympathized with a lot of what they were starting to go through, only more so as I, you know, got fed more and more information about it from, you know, all our Looney friends.
Wow. And you guys, are you still in that, like, are you still surrounded by all of that? Because I escaped all of that. I couldn't stay in the East Coast because of how much Mooney influence was there. I just, it triggered me too much to drive past. Belvedere was like driving past the lightning bolt.
Once I went to college, it was a lot different. It was much easier to just like pop into a Mooney's house with 13 other Moonies and play Super Smash when you were living in the town, you know?
Right.
But once you go to college, I pretty much disassociated myself with Westchester, except like going up there randomly to see friends and blah blah blah. But after college, it was just like, I still hold my Moody friends close to me, and where we, you know, we go on European trips, like Kyle mentioned, that was like the best time. And you know, we keep up with each other. I'm still friends with a number of the people we've named throughout this episode, if not all of them to some degree. So And again, they're all on varying paths. Some of them are still very much in the church, doing the church thing. And some of them are very much against the church and got out very quickly, but they're still all like on equal footing as my friend, as my friends, you know. And you.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. I mean, I live in New York City now. Andrew's in Philly. So yeah, we're not near, you know, any, you know, if you're not living in Tarrytown or Irvington, then, you know, the Mooniverse is not really, becomes part of your surroundings anymore. I mean, except I guess when I see the New Yorker Hotel, that's about it. But,
about the New Yorker, it's going, the church rhetoric is Hak Ja-Han saying that they're going broke and they can't pay for the New Yorker because it's a hotel, it's not making any income. So
she's the wife of Moon?
Yes, she's the wife.
She's in Las Vegas.
Korea.
Do you mind if I ask one quick question?
Yeah, sure.
Excuse my ignorance, but who is running the church now that Reverend Moon is dead?
So it's what Kyle said. It's going through a development phase. There's Hak Ja-Han's main group, which is the Unification Church Family Federation for World Peace. I want to say there's Preston's group, her son, Preston's group. And then there's Sean Moon's group, which is the infamous Rod of Iron ministry. So there's three factions that I'm aware of. But then there's also splinter groups off of those.
Okay, and I wanted to stop there to add, I forgot to talk about Injun Moon running Generation Peace Academy, which is a huge, huge labor trafficking scheme in the Unification Church. And there's other ones across seas. They're called different things, but we're going to focus on Generation Peace Academy because you can actually see the evidence for yourself. Go to generationpeaceacademy.org, look at the participants. There are about 115 participants first, second, and third year. Now, if we're doing the basic math, let's say 115 participants make $200 a day, which is, you know, pennies really compared to what I saw people make. So if they're making 115 people go fundraise for one day, they will bring in a total of $23,000. If you're doing that for a week, you come up with $115,000. If you're doing it for 1 month, a 40-day condition, which is very normal for the Unification Church, that's $460,000. That's $500,000 in one single month. In a single month, think about that. Injun Moon can successfully labor traffic 115 kids under the guise of a leadership training program and make $500,000 in a single month. It would only take 43 days for 115 participants making $200 a day to make $1 million. Let's talk about this. I just wanted to pause and add that little tidbit of information because it does have a breadcrumb trail that you could follow. And it is not something to forget.
But I want to say Hak Ja Han's probably the richest because like her Tongil companies, you know, there's like her companies, I want to say, are the most lucrative. But she's telling everybody that they can't afford the New Yorker and to mobilize America to do everything they can to keep the New Yorker. But, you know, that's a lie. She's a billionaire. She can easily pay years. She could easily pay years and years of taxes on the New Yorker. So that's a really interesting question. I wonder what's going to be happening with the New Yorker. It's funny you mentioned that. But that's a current issue right now is that the New Yorker is not bringing in profit is what they're saying. There's some issues there. But wow, I think what I'm getting from this is that despite religion, friendship is a very powerful human connection.
Absolutely. Yeah. Friendship comes from, you know, sharing and accepting other people's, you know, human experience. And everybody's is vastly different, some more than others. But I think at the end of the day, we're creatures of empathy. And I think if you build a friendship off empathy and drinking in the woods, a very long-standing and good friendship that will survive the test of time.
Yeah.
Just like it's proven with us and all the other people we've mentioned or maybe have forgotten to mention at this point, because I know I still keep up with a number of Moody friends.
Yeah. Friendship and shared experiences. I do remember a lot of us like going in the dozens into the woods, just disappearing into the woods with alcoholic beverages.
That's for sure.
Where KJ couldn't find us.
That was her MO. Yeah.
Yeah, anywhere, like, if it was a mile off the main road, like, the cops, well, they did find us every once in a while. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think one year they had ATVs, and they just were like, let's, like, rip these up.
No way.
Oh, yeah. Oh, big time. They definitely did.
Oh, my God. Yeah, because we had red Solo cups. Like, the red Solo cups were, like, just on the horizon. There'd be one Solo cup, and then you'd get to that one, and then just off to the horizon, there'd be another red Solo cup, and you follow that one.
That's so funny. It's like Hansel and Gretel.
Yeah.
Oh my God, what was that place called? There was a big rock and there was a
bedrock.
Bedrock, obviously, with the fireplace.
Yeah. I just talked to someone that's still best person in the world. And she, you know, knows people still, you know, that are going to high school and whatever, and bedrock is still happening. That place is still alive.
I think I took a few pictures of that place when we were all there drinking. I have to find those pictures, but those are good experiences. Authentic experiences, just human experiences, no religious influence, no social class influence, no nothing, just us being us. And yes, we were bonding over spirits, but there's something to be said about alcohol that peels away all of the inauthentic parts of yourself.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, Renee.
So I did have one question. I was looking for all these crazy.
Yeah.
Holy shit, Kyle.
Dude, Kyle, you're not crazy. Like you were in a, you were like a spy in a really powerful cult that has real world influence. Like there's a monopoly on the fish.
I would like to be looked more as an anthropologist, maybe.
Noted.
I was always interested in was there a caste system, maybe based on race at all, and specifically the relationship between members of Japanese descent and the Korean leadership, just because of the, you know, fraught and complicated relationship between Korea and Japan, mostly with Japan being the aggressor and Korea being colonized by them. Like, and then all of a sudden there's a cult where the Koreans are on top and the Japanese are on the bottom, you know, it kind of flipped, you know, compared to like the history between the two countries. Is there discrimination or anything against Japanese members, people of Japanese descent, because of that history? And also, is there a caste system based on like, oh, white Americans are more preferred than this group in the church? And I mean, I'm just asking because I know from your past podcasts and talking to other friends within the church that if there's one constant was that people of Korean descent were definitely on top. So,
I mean, for you to even have that question, you must have gotten little tidbits of information and observations. And absolutely, yeah, no, if you want me to confirm that, I can 100% confirm that that's the rhetoric that's been said. And I know that, you know, in history books of recent, Japan did colonize and enslave the Korean people, but you have to go back. Humanity's been doing that for thousands of years.
Yeah.
But that is,
I was just saying because it was such kind of recent history.
Oh, no, it is recent history, but that is the history that they used to shame Japanese members into submission. Absolutely. Like if an American member had to pay $100 for a book, the Japanese had to pay $4,000 for the same book.
Okay.
Or like, whereas an American had to donate, you know, this amount of money, the Japanese would have to donate like 40 times that amount of money. And then the Japanese pretty much gave their life. Like if there's any members that are as fundamental in the group that have given the most, that have literally died for the success of the businesses, mostly the success and development of the businesses, yes, it is the Japanese members. There are stories of Japanese members being murdered on the street while fundraising, or being killed in a van rollover while fundraising. And these were looked at as justifiable because of the lineage. And it's the sacrifice that the Japanese people have to make. And I'm only speaking about that from the church's perspective. I don't think in any way that this is at all true, but it is the theology that has been adopted in the caste system. And yes, if you were half Japanese, there's no way you would marry like a true family, quote unquote, member. The Koreans are very pure blood. They stay, even though they preach world unity through mass, you know, international blessings, the Korean families are pure blood. It's definitely racism. It's a caste system. There's definitely an underlying division that would take away the whole theology, that would undo the entire belief system if you look further into that alone.
Yeah.
I actually had a question that kind of is the same vein of this. Could you speak about, so when I talk to my friends about the Unification Church, I always hit a couple key points about why it is the organization that it is. But one of the points I always say is that they paid heavy influence into like mixed marriage. Like they made a point to, so all of the, for context, all of the Mooney friends that I have, 100% of them are half. Some race and then half the other. For example, I've seen half Japanese, half Norwegian, half Black, half Japanese, half even like half Korean, half Japanese. You know, it's all it seems like it's all intentionally mixed. So does the church have their, you know, rationale for that practice? Do you see a different rationale for that practice? And can you speak to that at all?
Yeah, I mean, so you have to think back in the 70s, these was when these marriages were being put together, right? So with the invention of international airlines and international flight, there's this radical idea of international relationships and international marriages. And I think Reverend Moon, I will give him the credit. I think he was the first one to profit on
globalization. And I'm not talking about, you know, natural. There was globalization prior to the airlines and Reverend Moon, but that was the radical fundamental idea behind Reverend Moon. That's what he coined. That's what he wrote, was the idea of globalization.
Because then he profited on marriages, of international marriages. Yeah, and he coined it, kind of. So when I was growing up, I was one of the first generations. There wasn't that many mixed kids. I was born in the 80s. So this is 20 years after Reverend Moon started doing his international. And when did commercial airlines start? Like in the 40s, right? 30s, 40s, commercial airlines.
And I just want to pause. When I'm talking about international marriages, I definitely, through my lens and my bias, I'm definitely talking about Asian with American and every other race, specifically rice and french fries.
And Reverend Moon kind of coined it like 60 years ago. So whenever I saw another international kid, I was like, oh, they must be a Mooney, because we've coined that. It's like eugenics. Right. Like, that's us.
Yeah.
I almost felt betrayed when I saw an international relationship that wasn't Unification Church members. seriously, like if I saw, like, right. I remember growing up in Irvington, every once in a while I would see like an Asian with another person that wasn't in the church, and I was like, are you guys Moonies? They're like, no, what are you talking about? I'm like, oh, what a waste. So, and the reason behind it, Reverend Moon, was like, if there's international relations between enemy countries, specifically Japan and America, or Korea and Japan, or Germany and America, then there's going to be a promotion of world peace faster. When in reality it was masking trafficking. It was masking human trafficking and, right. And profiting. He was profiting on the blessings, because the blessing that I attended, he made like $28 million, because you pay a certain amount to attend. And then you have the blessing rings and the blessing garments and all of these things that they specifically sell. So it's really, yeah, it's like, it's a business. And what I look at it as a business model. Now, Moonies that are listening to this podcast might look at it as a peace model for world peace. But I'm like, we might have propelled international marriages, but with the invention of international travel, it's going to happen. There's no need to force it. People are already becoming mixed. Like, the world is becoming closer and smaller. There's no need to stay in the church if that's your backbone. If you think, oh, it's for world peace, with the invention of the airplane, the world is getting smaller. There's no need to be in the church just for that reason.
Yeah, that's a good point. Morals as a whole have, you know, come to a forefront of just being a general understanding, and not something you have to lean on religion or an excuse to have. It's just right and wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I hope that answered that question. I don't know, is there anything
definitely
else?
Definitely did. I always found that to be one of the more interesting aspects of that religion is their, you know, their take on mixed marriage.
Yeah, and right. And like, it looks good on the skin, but there was a lot of internal conflict with mixed marriage, forcing mixed marriages, culturally speaking. I mean, there was a lot of violence, and there's a lot of abuse that is under the skin. We might look beautiful and mixed, but really there's a lot of conflict in those marriages and in those families that was unnecessary, because the world is becoming smaller anyway.
Right. Yeah. And your parents are mixed, right?
My mom is Japanese. My dad is American. And like, even in that. So when I told you about the investment into the Tarrytown properties that Bohee Pak stole from my parents, that was their wedding money that was gifted to them from my Japanese side.
And this is all from deduction. I wanted to say that I've never actually talked to my Asian family. I've never talked to my Japanese grandparents. I have no idea where what they're thinking. This is all just something I've put together in my brain. This is the best logic and reasoning I could come up with. So this is that.
They disowned my family. They're like, you're just a bunch of crazy Moonies, just giving the church all your money. Like, and they were millionaires. My grandpa owned a dairy farm in Japan and like a ski resort. Yeah. So Reverend Moon specifically targeted my mom because she came from a wealthy family. Get it? He specifically targeted wealthy families
Of
and wanted
course.
to funnel their money into his empire. So as soon as my family found out about that, they completely cut off. And so I've never met my grandparents. I've never talked to my cousins. I don't even know their names.
Wow. That's such a shame. Yeah.
So that's kind of some of the results of these, peace-loving
Right.
international
Yeah, that
marriages.
shunning aspect is just across the board one of the scariest things for anybody trying to leave a situation, because shunning is not something, exclusive to unificationism, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Right. And also, I listened to one of your past episodes with I can't remember his name, but he was a Mooney in the 70s and 80s. You're talking about
John Robbins.
that. And he was talking about the just how much they were so family focused and it's all about the family, but all of a sudden, but in actuality, these parents were never home, and they're always working for the church. And I have a, we have a friend that, that we're close to, and I don't think I that her dad, I don't think he was in the US for more than like 2 months a year, because he was working for Moon in Korea, and like she saw him maybe once or twice a year, and like, to promote family, but then rip them apart was definitely a sign to me, even back in high school, that like this isn't their actual core value. Their core value is making this guy more money.
Right.
So
And in
yeah.
the name, true parents, it's like your parents aren't your parents. True parents
Right,
are.
exactly.
So even in
Right,
that,
on the chalk on that sidewalk,
yeah, it's the writing on the wall. That's it.
And it's ingrained very, very young, like what I saw at Camp Sunrise, So
Wow. Wow. That is telling. Man, this is so powerful. Like as an outsider infiltrating, that's amazing. And I really hope this permeates into people's brains, gets them thinking. Like, it was obvious enough to you that there was some fundamental contradictions.
And also, like, where's this Netflix documentary happening? You guys really need a Netflix documentary. They're making about every other cult.
I know. I
You
love
guys
that the
deserve one.
They
Yeah.
probably own a third of Netflix, so who
Well,
knows?
that's true. I think I love the NX, and forgive me, I probably can't get it, but the
Oh, that one.
something
The one in
Kevin.
Albany.
I'm so glad he was held accountable. It's one of the I know it's a small cult, but the fact that they're holding people accountable, that's a huge it's a huge revolution. There's a lot of people that have not been held accountable. And I really hope, well, if they were to make a Netflix documentary, that means that the Moon family would need to be held accountable. And I think that's something that won't happen cheaply.
That's gonna be hard with their, team of lawyers, but
Yeah, that's a hell of
exactly.
an enemy to go after.
That
But
is
at least a documentary to let the rest of the world even know they exist, because so many don't,
Right.
I
Pretty
mean,
much 100% of the friend group that I've talked to about this church had
yeah.
no idea it even
Oh,
existed.
but it's such a
Nobody.
big influence.
Exactly.
It's crazy. Yeah.
You have to be, you would have to have grown, you would have to have lived through the 70s and 80s to even know what the word Mooney was. Like, my parents, knew who they were, you know, because they grew up in New York City. They would like in the New York Post, they would see like mass marriages in Yankee Stadium. Weird. Yeah, okay.
Madison Yankee, Square Garden.
You know, but like, you know, like my parents moved to Irvington. They didn't know Reverend Moon was there. It wasn't until I started becoming friends with some of them. They were like, oh, those guys, the mass marriage people back in the 70s. Oh yeah, I remember. Yeah. But yeah. Anyone in our generation, they've never heard of the Moonies. Yeah.
And that's the CIA influence. Bohipak was a CIA agent. Like it was really, they got all their mass attention in the 70s, got their families established. And then I want to say they went underground and proliferated. Yeah. And so it is important to talk about it, not just because it's just the Moonies fetishism or whatever, but because it reflects society as a whole in general. I think that there's a lot of parallels between like Jehovah's Witnesses and Catholicism and Mormons and Scientology, all of it, even just domestic relationships, domestic abuse relationships, survivors in general. There's so many parallels. I want to say the Squid Games is the closest thing I've seen to the Moonies on Netflix.
Which your Squid Games painting is just incredible. It's awesome.
Thank you. Well, when I saw that character, the reason I painted him, I was like, that's Reverend Moon. Like, that's my dad. Right. Yeah, that's every narcissistic leader in the Unification Church that I've ever met. They make you love them. They get on your level. It's all for their entertainment and profit, but they make you love them.
Nail on the head with that one. Just absolutely nailed
it. I mean, like that character, like that's it. If you want to see a Moonie Netflix documentary, we'll watch the Squid Games.
It's already made, yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes I wonder, like that Korean writer, like it's bigger in Korea. So there's more Koreans know about the Unification Church. Maybe there's subliminal messages. Yeah. Who knows? I mean, there's so many overlays in society in general with control and programming.
Yeah, programming, right? And it's all programming, all religions.
But I love how this language is being created, so you can kind of like see it for what it is, save the programming you want, get rid of the rest.
Like I said at the beginning, it's just like get yourself as much information as possible, just non-biased, like as much just like info, and then it's up to you to make your decision.
Yeah. I'm so impressed with both of you guys. Kyle, the anthropology. That's amazing that you infiltrated Camp Sunrise because it doesn't exist anymore.
And no, just be honest, I did that was not my goal. Again, my goal was just drunk in a cabin.
Yeah. Well, everything's changing. The Unification Church is not what I know. What I knew it was 10 years ago, it's changed radically. Camp Sunrise, I don't think exists anymore. Certain things have changed so much that I wouldn't even recognize it if I went back. So that's something to talk about too, is that we're talking about the Unification Church of 13 years ago.
Right.
So that's why these stories need to come out, because before it changes into something else.
Adapted almost, right?
Oh yeah.
Because a successful cult is always adapted to the times.
Yeah, and then there's no accountability, and so there's no learning from history. It's just a blank slate. It's a new page, and the abuse, the cycle of violence, and the cycle of abuse just starts all over. And there'll be another Renee. There's probably another suicidal girl in high school trying to fit in. Who knows?
Right.
And I don't want that. Absolutely. There's another Kyle sneaking into a compound. I'm playing.
You know? Yeah, Kyle, let's put you in for round two, Mission Impossible style.
Let's go. Supposedly, they like rent out Belvedere for weddings now. So,
I heard like East Garden when people were filming movies there.
You know, those properties are just losing money left and right. So,
wink, wink.
Wink, wink.
Yeah, I'm sure they're paid. There's no mortgage on them. They're probably just paying taxes. They just like use that bait and switch for members. Yeah.
Yeah,
I hate that tactic. So just think for yourself, follow the money. It's a Sunday. My kids are probably going insane without me. But I do want to make a doorway that we could possibly have a second part of this if there's some questions that come pouring in.
Absolutely. If people aren't tired of hearing us talk yet, for sure.
Oh, totally. So, Kyle, go. How can people reach you with questions or comments?
KT Sullivan 91 at gmail.com probably be the best. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. And
awesome. Yeah. So I still use my school email, which is hilarious.
Tweaker 69 at AOL.com.
Yeah, AOL, that little chestnut. Now I can be reached at Andrew Andrew.Eastham. EASTHAM at Temple, TEMPLE.EDU. I'm happy to take any questions. And if we get a bunch of questions, we can all just like collaborate them and do another quick episode or something.
Yeah, I love how we had like a really dynamic take of the Unification Church, and it wasn't all bad, and it was nice.
Yeah, yeah. And at the end of the day, there's not a single member of this church that I didn't get on with. It was all just, you know, circumstances that would make me more friends than another, but everybody I know from the Unificationist Church always treated me with like respect and dignity at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's, you know, from an outsider's perspective, that even through the, you know, everything all of you went through individually being part of the church, I mean, something was going right, at least with making, genuine and fun people to be friends with, you know.
that hasn't been said really actually enough. That might have never been said on this podcast, so I really appreciate you bringing in that aspect, because you're right. I mean, I know some really, really amazing people inside and outside of the church, and I don't know if it's just the church or if it's just people just being great people.
Yeah,
right. Well, Renee, thanks so much for having us. It was amazing to catch up with you again, because I know we've talked a little bit on social media, but to have a conversation with you after all these years and after all that time we spent together in high school, it's just, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's been awesome. I would love to get back with definitely about the feedback on this show too. Thank you so much for taking your time out of this Sunday. This concludes Sunday service with the Tarrytown Irvington crew.
Now, if you would like to leave questions or comments, I have left a feedback questionnaire on my Spotify and Anchor accounts. Please drop a comment below, drop some feedback, let us know what you want to hear more of, and we will talk about it. Catch you later.